Hi, this is Jim Cook, the brewer and founder of Samuel Adams, and you're listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'll see you in the future.
Scrolling for January 15th, 2019. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Hassenflo.
And we're just a couple of guys sitting around talking about things that are important to us. Hopefully they're important to you. And if you need more information, there's so many great ways to find more information. This weekend, Chip, it is Martin Luther King Jr. Day. Take the day off on Monday.
You're going to give me the day off.
Yeah, you can definitely have the day off, but you have to come back in on Tuesday because we have to do a show.
That's like a dream come true. Steve.
I have a dream. It's a weird dream about my landlord and building a boat. But, wait. Have you ever heard Martin Luther King Jr.'s I Had a Weird Dream speech? It's totally different. I love Martin Luther King Day. I love the idea of teaching my students about all of those things in the civil rights era in the 1960s, how their life is different because of this one man and his ability to get a crowd together and to really make a difference in life.
Excellent. In fact, we talked a lot about movies mm-hmm. Over the years concerning Martin Luther King. And then we also have...
there's so many great movies.
We also have February coming up, which is Black History Month, or American Black History Month.
Excellent.
So there we go.
Film at 11.
Brings us to our film at 11, our movie of the week. I was on an airplane, Chip, and I was watching a movie, and I sent you a message after I got off of the airplane safely after the emergency landing, and I said to you, Chip, you need to watch Three Identical Strangers. This is a documentary that came out in 2018. I love this movie.
All right, so this movie was released right at the end of November.
Uh-huh.
And I think we said we wanted to see this, but I didn't think we were going to see it so soon.
The commercial, the trailer for this says there's a terrible, amazing twist, and I had no idea what the terrible, amazing twist was going to be from the trailer. And boy, is it a terrible, amazing twist.
Well, this is a very interesting documentary. This movie is available on iTunes. Mm-hmm. It is available at Amazon, so you can run it through your app.
Mm-hmm.
I ended up watching it, and I think that you hit something. This is a story about three, triplets, ultimately.
Triplets who were separated at birth and didn't know until they got to college that their brothers existed. And the story in the trailer, so I'm not ruining anything here, the story is that this one guy went to college and all of these people said, "Hey, Eddie!" And he said, my name's not Eddie. I'm not Eddie. What are you talking about, Eddie? And it turns out that these triplets were separated at birth.
Sure.
Their parents never knew that there were brothers out there.
Absolutely. And what we ultimately learn is that they were part of a scientific experiment that no one knew about except for...
the experimenters.
That's right. Initially, it was sold to them that... that they would be studied.
Mm-hmm.
But really, it was just like, oh, your child's adopted. We have to stop by every once in a while to make sure everything's
because
okay.
Because that's the rules of adoption. That's what they told the parents was, this is normal. This is what we always do. We always bring a film crew and ask all these questions and check for all of these different stages of development over time. Mm-hmm. But that's not normal.
Well, it gets even crazier.
Mm-hmm.
Because ultimately, we find out, because the question is that how similar these kids were. And that's initially what we found. And so this entire movie is exploring nature versus nurture.
That was the entire experiment, was the idea of, are we a product of our nature? Are we who we are based on genetics, or are we who we are because of our surroundings growing up?
And certainly, I don't want to give away all the twists that we're talking about in this movie, because it really is, as you start, the reveals get deeper and deeper and deeper.
Mm-hmm.
You should be shocked that, first of all, these kids were born in the early 60s.
Uh-huh.
So if we recognize that the end of World War II happened in 1945,
uh-huh.
what we're dealing with, 15, 16 years later, when these kids are born.
And we haven't said it out loud yet, these kids are all Jewish. The agency that was handing out these kids, the adoption agency, was a Jewish-based agency. And they took these kids and experimented on them. And one of the three boys said, this is like the Nazis.
Well, yeah, and I want to be very clear. There were a lot of experiments on humans that you may not be aware of. But the idea that this is 16 years after the end of World War II, when we recognize what was going on in Germany, and you should be shocked by that, to recognize that this would continue in the United States, that three children separated at birth, given to different families who had very different demographics, but similar situations. Mm-hmm. They all had older sisters.
And the older sisters were all virtually the same age.
Sure.
This is an experiment that was set up very carefully by these people who were doing this experiment. Mm-hmm. And to not tell these kids, to not tell these parents is cruel.
And this was not published.
Never. This was never published. This is stuck in a box somewhere in an archive, and it's due to be opened
2060.
In 2060, when everybody in this will be gone.
Well, I tell you, we do recommend this. You should see this. I would say 75 out of 100.
Yeah, I really like this one.
I think that there is enough twists and things that you will...
and joy. There's joy there. There's a lot of happiness.
Well, they found each other.
Yeah.
And they immediately just recognize. Imagine if you found somebody who's just like you.
And they had a wonderful, loving life together for a very long time until they didn't.
All right, so here's the final twist on this that we'll just go ahead and give away.
Okay.
Nature versus nurture.
Uh-huh.
Initially, you're starting to look at how similar they are. Ultimately, though, you're looking about their differences. And a lot of it had to be on how they were parented, how they grew up. And they had different types of families, different demographics, and a number of different parts to it.
Very carefully chosen by these experimenters again.
Okay, so... ultimately, the loving family that you create for your children, the supportive family, means so much to these young people.
Uh-huh.
So my initial thought is, after leaving this, is go read a parenting book and how to make sure your kids know that they're loved and they're cared for, because that one is the one that all the kids gravitated to. And in addition to that, I think that may be the healthiest.
That's the one who thrived the most out of these three very, very similar creatures. The one who had the most loving family thrived the most. It's pretty stunning to think about. We talk about all the time, being fathers, having kids is hard.
Absolutely.
There is no instruction manual, and every instruction manual that we can get our hands on, we try very hard to be the best parents we can be, and sometimes we're just fumbling in the dark, hoping that we're doing the right thing.
Well, you know, if you handhold your child through everything, that's not helping them grow up.
Nope.
And if you leave them and neglect them, that's not helping them grow up.
Right.
So finding that right balance, how to interact with them, how to empower them, how to give them opportunities to be successful, and also to allow them to fail.
Yeah, this is a great story. I really recommend Three Identical Strangers. It is one of the documentaries of 2018. There was a big year for documentaries. My favorite movie of 2018 was Won't You Be My Neighbor. That made a huge amount of money. RBG, the Ruth Bader Ginsburg documentary, was a great documentary, and this is number three on the list for 2018.
Well, there you go.
There you go. You got a chance to see Mary, Queen of Scots. We talked about this about a month ago when it was coming out. Was this a good movie?
I enjoyed this. This came out the 21st of December, so right before Christmas.
Uh-huh.
And this was Bo Willimon, who also was the writer of House of Cards, has his hands in this.
Okay.
I think we're dealing with a historical event. You know, we have Mary, Queen of Scots, and we also have Elizabeth the First, played by Margot Robbie.
Uh-huh.
And let's make sure Ronan. I'm not going to try to pronounce this lady's name.
She's very Scottish. That is definitely a very Scottish name.
Well, Gaelic name, I
Gaelic?
Would say.
Okay.
Well, here we go. We dealt with a lot of modern issues in a
historical movie. Perspective. Yeah.
And I don't know how true it is. And that's the whole point, is that we get these beautiful costumes, we get a story, and I'm going...
Is this accurate? And the question is, do you need it to be accurate?
It doesn't have to be accurate, but you really are dealing with contemporary issues.
Uh-huh.
in a situation where you're going, I don't know. I do know that you get a feeling of the difference between the Protestant English situation and Mary Queen of Scots, who was Catholic.
Yeah.
We're also basically presented as Mary Queen of Scots as being a very open person. You could worship how you wanted to, your sexuality, you could be what it, you know, you'd like it to be, and all these other things. And that's what kind of gets me. This is
very 21st century.
Yeah. And that's where I don't know how true that was. I do know that they were manipulated. They ended up having a situation the way they portrayed is they could have been friends, but circumstances wouldn't allow them to be friends. So there we go.
So, but you enjoyed it. It's a good adventure if you can put aside all of the possible perspective issues.
If it's a story, you're going to enjoy stuff. If it's historical, I don't know how accurate it is.
Okay. So give it a number from 1 to 100 on your chip 60, scale.
65.
It's always 60. Why do I even ask? You got to see The Wife. This is the story of a woman whose husband is a Nobel Prize winner for literature. This is featuring Glenn Close, who won the Golden Globe for Best Actress a couple weeks ago.
And this could win Best Picture. This could.
That good.
I enjoyed this film a whole bunch.
Okay.
The story ultimately comes down to the husband won the Nobel Prize. They head off to accept the award, and Glenn Close is having sort of, she's the wife.
She's second fiddle to the husband. The husband is taking the spotlight, and she's just standing behind.
Sure. Yeah. And it's a product of its time. And what I mean by is when they were young, men were men, and women were, you know, basically behind the man. Now, this is certainly not today. A woman could win the Nobel Prize for literature.
Sure.
But what we ultimately learn is the twist of this, not to give away everything, is that she was the writer.
Yeah.
And she was having a challenge with this. She didn't have a challenge with the decision she made at the time, but ultimately her life. She was going through this. Glenn Close is a great person to play this character. She really shows the anguish that was going on through this.
Yeah.
And the entire cast is very good. This is a good story. This is a grown-up film.
Okay.
And we should not be unhappy to watch something that is not comic booky.
There you go. Your other grown-up film that you watched is called Beautiful Boy. This is based on the pair of best-selling memoirs from father and son David and Nick Sheff, who went through a terrible time together and came through it, and then this movie is here to show us what it might be like to suffer some terrible ideas in life.
All right, so ultimately this is a story of Michael Scott leaving Scranton, PA, and heading to the woods to start his family.
Okay.
It also stars the human resources person from The Office, too. Steve, I don't know if you know that.
Yes, I remember when we talked about this, when we said that this one was coming out. And yes, this is a very deeply... this is... Sorry.
So we're laughing about this, but this is a very serious film.
It's a very serious film, Chip.
And it's a nightmare for any parent that would experience. So ultimately, the son is experimenting with drugs. This is not a person experimenting with marijuana. This is a very addictive drug. And Michael Scott.
Go on.
Is portraying a father who was a writer for Rolling Stone.
Okay.
And, you know, he's learning about this drug. He's learning about what it's doing to his son. For people who are susceptible to drugs.
To addiction. Yeah.
This definitely, the craving is real.
Right.
There are times when he's searching the city for his son, and he finds him. And he brings him home. They throw him through therapy. They go through... you know, withdrawal. There's all this stuff that's going through. They're
trying everything that he can think of to help his son, just as we would, as fathers.
As mom and dad would do.
Yeah.
One of the real telling signs of this story ultimately comes to the part where the father recognizes he can't do anything.
He's tried everything.
Okay. And imagine your child, when I say giving up, it's not that you don't, in your mind, hope they get better. but you've done everything you can.
You've exhausted every possibility, everything you can possibly do for your child.
Eventually, the child calls dad and says, hey, dad, listen, I've hit a low. I want help to get better. And the father's response is, you need to call your sponsor.
Yeah.
And that right there is that part where you just recognize you've gone as far as you can. Now, we did a little bit of research to prepare for the show. It sounds like the son is living now.
Yeah, he's 36 years old. He's seems like he's out of the woods of this addiction. And he's an award-winning writer for his memoir of this time in his life.
Wow. This is this once again is a grown-up film.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that if you really want to go on this journey, please do. But this is not the happy film.
Right.
That
it has a relatively happy ending in real life, but in the film.
Yeah, I didn't really think it was not a real so happy much. Ending. You know, and I just, you know, you just feel for any person that you know, and you just hope it's not you.
Yeah.
That has to deal with this. So I'm so sorry that they had to write this type of film, but it's out there. It's part of life.
There you go. I watched something happy.
Thank you, Steve.
I watched a show that I had no idea that this existed. I was listening to The Incomparable, one of my favorite podcasts, and they were doing their Favorites of 2018 show, kind of like we did for our Favorites of 2018, and the host, Jason Snell, recommended Good Eats Reloaded. Those of you who remember the show Good Eats, this is one of the first shows on the Food Network on basic cable.
One of my favorite shows.
One of my favorite, absolutely my favorite host of a cooking show is Alton Brown.
Well, he is certainly a very engaging person, very fun-loving.
I think that he would be really fun to go out and have dinner with. I think he is very knowledgeable and very personable. He's also very smart. He came up with the idea of going back to the beginning of his program, Good Eats. By the way, it's celebrating its 20th anniversary this year.
And Good Eats, for those who are not aware of it, was a cooking show that went through the science of the cooking and a lot of humor.
A lot of humor built into it.
Sure.
He went back to those original tapes from 1999, and he's going through systematically to say, some of these things that I said 20 years ago were wrong. I was incorrect in these statements. I'm going to amend my own statements. And some of these things, I've changed my mind in the last 20 years. Some of the technology of food has changed in 20 years. No shock there. And here are some of the new information that I'm going to add to what I told you 20 years ago. This is brilliant. This is wonderful television. It was good television 20 years ago. It's even better now with the Reloaded version where he's going through these once again.
And you can find this on the Cooking Channel.
The Cooking Channel, which is an offshoot of the Food Network, that those of you who still have basic cable might have access to these, or you can go to our Amazon store. We've got episodes on the Amazon store as well.
And while Alton Brown grew up in the, basically the show was based out of Atlanta, Georgia, WTTW, our local PBS station, was the first channel to air that for us.
Don't you love it? I love PBS. I think PBS best thing that ever happened to television. Opening this week, we've got some movies that might be the best thing to ever happen to movies. We've got the first one is Glass. This is the sequel to Split, which is the offshoot of Unbreakable.
Which we didn't know at the time, right?
Most of us did not know that. Spoilers, by the way, for the movie Split. It is the second in a trilogy of superheroes and supervillains who live in the real world. You remember Unbreakable, Bruce Willis was not able to be hurt. He was a superhero in real life. And Mr. Glass was the supervillain. He's the guy who's trying to hurt Unbreakable Man.
And he has bones that are very brittle. And he looks like Nick Fury, Steve. I don't know how that is the case.
There are snakes on the plane! I look forward to this one. The critics have not been kind to this movie, but M. Night Shyamalan is a good filmmaker. I like the way he puts together a movie. I look forward to seeing this ending of the story of those characters. Split was really good. I really enjoyed the psychological thriller that is Split. If you haven't seen that one yet, I recommend seeing it before you try to go see the third version. There is a movie called Adult Life Skills that's coming out. This was actually made in 2016. It's a little Scottish film about about a girl whose twin brother dies, and she's very sad about her twin brother. That sense of loss of that brother mm-hmm. is very overwhelming to her, and she has to find a way out of it. And you go, Steve, why are you talking about some movie from 2016? The lead character is Jodie Whittaker, the current Doctor Who.
Oh!
So I'll go see that movie, because I love Jodie Whittaker's acting style. She shines in this trailer. I look forward to this one. There's a movie called The Brawler. This is the true life story of boxer Chuck Wepner, who was known as the Bayonne Bleeder.
And he fought Muhammad Ali at
yes,
some point.
Yes, he did. He had the opportunity to fight the actual heavyweight champion, Muhammad Ali.
Now, somehow Rocky Balboa comes to mind, Steve. Why is that?
That's right. This man was the actual inspiration for Sylvester Stallone's character, Rocky. And this is just a...
Hey, cut me.
This is one of those New Jersey kind of guys with a New Jersey accent talking about boxing and how it's important to be a brawler. This looks really interesting to
this,
me.
This does.
This is the second film about him, by the way. There was a movie made 2 years ago just called Chuck, which was the story of this man. So this is a very interesting dude. There's a movie called Close coming to Netflix. This is the story of a bodyguard, a close protection officer, who takes the job of protecting a rich young heiress. This looks like an interesting adventure.
And you can find this on Netflix.
Yep, that's one of those good Netflix ones. I look forward to that one. There is a foreign film. No, it's not Spanish.
It isn't?
This is a reading movie.
It's a reading movie.
This one's just simply called Girl. It's the story of a young man who feels like he should be a young lady and wants to be a ballerina, and all the troubles of gender identity that we are seeing more and more in our society.
Well, Steve, I could not, when I was watching the trailer, I was going, I didn't know that until there's this part where you're like, oh. So anyway, this is fantastic as far as interesting. Steve, tell us a little bit about how they found the actor.
Yeah, they had an open casting call for the lead in this movie, and they did not tell anybody what gender that role was designed for. It was open to any male or female actor who wanted to be a part of this movie, and the young man that they found certainly has the right attributes to play a person who is stuck in the middle of the two genders.
Yeah, very interesting.
I look forward to that one.
Let's get back to Netflix, Dave.
Okay, on Netflix, there is a new cartoon called Carmen Sandiego, and you Generation Xers out there are maybe a little more excited about this than anybody else, because where in the world is Carmen Sandiego was a great PBS show.
Steve, there's no Rockapella in this.
No, this is a different show. This is not a game show. This is not studying geography with Rockapella singing in
the
background.
This is a cartoon.
This is a cartoon. It's an adventure. But of course, the adventure will take place all around the world and learning a little bit about geography as we get there.
All right. On Amazon Prime, what am I watching?
I know what you're watching. You are going to watch The Grand Tour Season 3.
Well, yeah, Jeremy could hit somebody, Steve.
You have to watch it. Jeremy will find you if you don't. This show...
He'll hunt you down. He's the Richard Marx of shows on cars.
This is so much fun. Remember, this is the show that was Top Gear on the BBC, and then these three guys left the show, and they tried to make Top Gear with Joey from Friends. It didn't work out so well, by
it
the
didn't.
Way.
Oh, well, no, anyway.
It didn't work out. But these three guys are really entertaining, and they know a lot about cars, and they are characters that I love to watch. I look forward to Grand Tour Season 3. By the way, if you have a 4K TV, they film this in full 4K. It is gorgeous to watch. I recommend that highly. I also recommend that you make it to the movie theater on Monday, on Martin Luther King Jr. Day, because Fathom Events is showing They Shall Not Grow Old in theaters again on Monday.
Now, this is the Peter Jackson film that we reviewed a couple weeks ago that was fantastic.
This is the most fantastic film concept I've ever heard of. This is 100-year-old footage from World War I that Peter Jackson and his group have painstakingly colorized and added sound to, and it just gives the audience this feeling of the reality of war in a way that black and white footage never did.
Correct. World War I is really what we're looking at.
Right. This is fantastic storytelling. Really, really, really make plans to be in the theater on Monday to see They Shall Not Grow Old. Book it. Brings us to our book it, our book of the week. I got a chance to read a really interesting book. I really suggest. This one is called Barrel Aged Stout and Selling Out: Goose Island, Anheuser-Busch, and How Craft Beer Became Big Business, by Josh Knoll, who happens to be a Chicago Tribune writer. This is a brilliant book about craft beer, about marketing, about who we are, and about the idea of getting together over beers and having a community of people. Craft beer business is huge right now. There's so many craft beers, and the idea of selling out — Goose Island is our local Chicago craft beer — the idea of selling out to Anheuser-Busch, who was then acquired by InBev, which is a giant global, huge behemoth.
Yes.
Does that change what Goose Island means to the people of Chicago?
It potentially could. It potentially could. Because, you know, when we look at a company like Boston Brewing Company, mm-hmm. that was started from nothing, and basically it's the Sam Adams company.
Yeah. Jim Cook.
They started their company knowing that they would like to be an Anheuser-Busch.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then we have a company like Yingling, who once InBev bought Anheuser-Busch, started expanding like crazy, but really is, you know, they have a lager that is like the beer that's on the East Coast.
Yeah.
It's the oldest brewery in the United States.
Right.
Goose Island was started as a craft beer, and yeah. that's small batches. And when I say small batches, that means, you know, for the area.
Mm-hmm.
When you go to a place like Anheuser-Busch InBev, the idea is to take these beers around the world.
And that's exactly what Anheuser-Busch InBev has done for Goose Island. Goose Island is now a global brand. You can go to Japan and order a 312. That seems weird.
That's the area code, by the way. For our listeners who are outside the Chicago area.
Dial 312. Yes, 312 is the area code for Chicago, and that is Chicago's beer. That was the statement that they were making by naming that beer, "This is for Chicago."
So tell me about the Hall family. How did they start this brewery?
Well, like most brewery stories, this is the story of a guy who wanted to make a good business. He was not a beer guy. He was a marketing guy. He was in cardboard boxes before he started Goose Island Brewery.
Really?
Yeah. He was not a beer guy, but he found the right people who had the right knowledge to start this wonderful business and to make it thrive and survive in Chicago.
So in Europe, there are a lot of specialty beers and you know, a lot more different flavors.
Mm-hmm.
In the United States, we somehow had, through industrialization,
mm-hmm.
you know, think of like Budweiser
and Miller Lite.
Yep. We certainly had gone to more bland beers.
And that's where this story starts. The author tells us about how we were stuck in Budweiser and Miller are the beers. Mm-hmm. If you're not drinking those two beers, what are you doing with your day? And that's where this whole industry really blossomed in the late 80s and 90s, was this craft beer, the story of these guys who make this thing that care about this thing, mm-hmm. that we can share in a community. This is a great story with enough talk about marketing, enough talk about numbers in there to okay. make this really important to talk about how we do business in the world.
Well, and you know, getting big doesn't necessarily mean you're selling out. But the story is, you know, really is a story about, you know, what does it take to become a big player? Mm-hmm. I mean, is Amazon started as a small player?
Right.
Amazon now dominates. You know, is Amazon Walmart? You know,
it's in a lot of ways it's better than Walmart.
It could be.
There's a lot to be said about.
Is it Sears?
Well, there's a lot to be said about knowing the players in a company like that.
Sure.
Name me somebody. Who's the head of Sears? I don't even know anymore.
Well, here's a real issue that we're dealing with. On some level, we want big. Because when we go to Amazon or go to I'm going to use Sears as our example.
Mm-hmm.
we know what we're getting.
True.
So at one time, being Budweiser or being Miller meant you knew, being McDonald's means that you knew what you wanted. As we have moved to this new level, we want things that are tailored to each of us. And sometimes those things that are tailored to us can be, can blow up and become big. But many times we want them to stay as the unknown.
Well,
yeah.
Known enough.
You want to be, it's about signaling when you buy beer.
It is about signaling. For me, I want to know the people that make my beer. I want to know the people who make my food. I don't want the Industrial Revolution burger. I want to know a story. I want a narrative behind it. Beer is a great example of that. Goose Island has a great foundation story.
Sure.
And it is Chicago's beer. It is our beer. And yes, now you can get it in Japan.
There you go. Yeah.
This is a great book. I really recommend it. Not just because I drink a beer or two every once in a while. Just occasionally.
Steve, it's part of history.
This is historic. This is very Chicago. Josh Knoll is a great writer. I've listened to a lot of interviews with him. I would love to get him on the show and talk to him about the beer business and the writing business. Because there's some writing business here about how to get a book to a level that it's important like this one.
Okay.
This is a good book. It's called Barrel Aged Stout and Selling Out, Goose Island, Anheuser-Busch, and How Craft Beer Became Big Business by Josh Knoll. You can find it on our Amazon store, amazon.toomuchscrolling.com.
Scroll with it.
Brings us to our scroll with it. You know, last week I told you that CES, the Consumer Electronics Show, was starting in Las Vegas. You rolled your eyes, and I said, yes, I know. I will report on it all week. And here we are, a week later. I can tell you all about the Consumer Electronics Show. It was awesome.
Oh, wonderful. Steve, I'm hungry. Tell me about it.
Well, the first big story, and some people were really upset that this was the big story coming out of the Consumer Electronics Show, but the big story that everybody kept talking about was the Impossible Burger. Do you know the Impossible Burger?
I do, Steve.
Do you know where to get one?
No, I know there's some restaurants.
Here's one.
Oh, really?
I had the children go and get us some Impossible Burgers because they're at every White Castle across the country.
Really?
So here is a regular White Castle burger, and here is an Impossible White Castle burger.
Now that's impossible, Steve.
The idea of the Impossible Burger is this is a fully plant-based meat substitute, completely sustainable and yet still really delicious.
All right. So, and what they've been able to do is isolate what gives meat flavor.
Mm-hmm.
And so iron was part of that. And so it sizzles when they cook it. And there's all these cues that are going on.
And it doesn't taste like a veggie burger. Let's taste these.
Oh, here we go.
Here we go.
All right. So this, we're eating one right now.
Mm-hmm.
It's got good texture. It's got meat texture.
It's not perfect. It's not exactly the same as the meat texture.
But with the cheese and with the bun and the pickle,
I don't think most people would notice the difference.
No.
If I didn't tell you this was not meat, I don't think you would look at it and go, ugh, this is a veggie burger. This is made with soybeans. It tastes like meat.
It does. It does. Yeah. There's no problem. And it's got like the bite of a White Castle burger.
It does. I'm going to taste the regular beef White Castle burger just to remind myself, because this is a very processed beef. You know, it's not going to taste exactly the same.
So when did you have your first White Castle burger?
Oh, geez. I grew up with White Castle burgers.
Did you?
Oh, yeah. That was a part of my existence as a young person.
So we didn't have White Castle in North Carolina.
Oh, wow. Chicago, we got White Castle.
The first time I had a White Castle burger was when I went to Georgetown in Washington, D.C.
Okay.
And so we were walking around, and we were young, and we had gone out that evening. And like many people who go out in the evening, it's late in the evening, and you're hungry.
That was not my story. My story was certainly White Castle existed as a part of our going to fast food restaurants existence. You're eating a lot more of the meat one.
Well, I just had another bite.
The Impossible Burger is good. It's not perfect, but according
to... It's much thicker than the
I noticed
White
that.
Castle regular burger.
I noticed that. There's a lot more meat on the Impossible Burger, meat in quotation marks there, but it certainly tastes like meat.
For White Castle, I would say this is fine. I mean, what I mean by that is, if this is what they gave you, I don't think you'd have any problem
with it. If you weren't told that this was not meat, you probably wouldn't notice it. You might think this is a lower quality meat than a high quality restaurant meat.
Yeah, this is meat. Certainly not Five Guys or...
Sure, but it's White Castle.
Or Portillo's or something like that.
Right. But every White Castle across the country now has the Impossible Burger. I think I would choose those.
Are they the same price?
I honestly don't know.
Okay.
They didn't leave a receipt. I don't know. We'll find out. We'll put it in the show notes. So the thing about the Impossible Burger, at CES, they rolled out their second version, their Impossible Burger 2.0, and everybody who tasted it said, wow, this is even better than the original. So we are moving into food technology.
Everything's getting better through science, Steve.
And here we are with the Impossible Burger at your local White Castle.
There you go.
There's some TV news from CES. There were 8K TVs on display this year at CES. Samsung, Sony, Panasonic, TCL, and LG all had their 8K TVs. For me, for my money, TCL is the company that I'm going to go to if I ever decide to upgrade any of my TVs, because they have Roku built into their software.
And my concern with that is my televisions I currently have Android TVs,
mm-hmm.
and I have Sony. So Sony certainly, these were not the cheap televisions.
Right.
And they've already started pulling stuff off of the Android television.
Yeah.
As they're not supporting it. So I have Apple TVs hooked up to them.
So that's the thing. For right now, I am in love with the idea of the built-in Roku. My TV that has that is my favorite TV in the whole house, mm-hmm. because it integrates so well with all of the different apps, all the different channels. It's all right there in the menu.
Well, it's and the price is right.
And the price is right.
I mean, the Apple television is certainly unreasonable. All right, so many of our listeners may not know what 8K is. So televisions for high definition are 1080p,
mm-hmm.
actually 720p.
It's still high definition.
Okay, and so that technology is probably, what, 15 years old?
Getting there.
Okay.
It might be a little bit less than 15, but it's right there.
And if you're sitting as a normal person would sit watching a television,
uh-huh.
your eyes can see that as high definition.
Right.
4K television is four times that resolution of the 1080p.
Uh-huh.
That means you could actually sit like an inch from that television, and it still would show up as
clear, not pixelated, very amazing picture.
But it's pulling four times the data.
Mm-hmm.
So for most of us, even though there are shows like the Grand Tour
mm-hmm.
that are in 4K, we would not recommend pulling 4K through your internet service provider.
Because most of us have a data cap now.
That's
the,
right.
The days of unlimited data, even through cable, is gone.
Well, certainly watching a movie or a show doesn't blow that, but if you were going to watch it day in and day out, you would blow your data cap.
You would have to spend more money. The 8K is double that resolution, and therefore double that amount of data, so we're going to run into a problem where we're going to have to pay more to get that signal to see that beautiful picture. And there's lots of people who say you can't actually see
Correct.
8K. Your eyeballs cannot register the difference between 4K and 8K.
And my eyes are going bad as we speak, Steve.
Right, so.
And so what
Back
I can
to
say,
radio.
Yeah. So what I'm saying about this is, as we were preparing, you said that many shows are now being recorded in 8K.
Almost everything that has been recorded, movies and TV shows, for the last 3 or 4 years has been recorded in 8K.
So I don't know where we would watch that. Maybe it's for movies, like going to the theater to see that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know many homes that should have 8K. And even 4K, I think, is kind of overboard right now. Although, it is becoming the standard.
It's beautiful. It is a beautiful picture. There's no doubt about that. There's some beautiful TVs that were rolled out at CES. Ba-dum-dum. See what I did there? This is a rollable TV from LG. It's an OLED TV. It's 56 inches across, diagonal.
Okay.
4K, and it rolls up into a little box that looks like one of those, like a sound bar that you might put under your TV. Your TV magically rolls mechanically into this box so you don't have to look at your TV all day.
So much like lighting, we're going to see a revolution in how we use our entertainment. You know, that black void, which is your television that sits
that
in
black
your
black mirror.
Uh-huh. Oh, I mean, what do you do with it? That ability to hide that away.
You when you watch all the different versions of the Bandersnatch. Yeah. Go on.
Well, my point is to have that the hide away, to be in a place that's not always viewable.
Yeah.
So it's going to, this is all about aesthetics. And this is the latest in that technology. How wonderful for us.
Yeah, it looks wonderful. There are some great health solutions that are coming out in the next few years. There's a few that were highlighted at CES this year. Omron has a heart guide wearable blood pressure watch. A watch that you walk around with, and every once in a while, it takes your blood pressure. I really look forward to a day where I could monitor my blood pressure a little bit more carefully.
That's awesome. That's awesome. In fact, many people suffer from hypertension.
Uh-huh.
And the question is, when does that switch? I mean, you're a young person, and all of a sudden, you're like, you have high blood pressure issues.
Yep.
And so, when does that switch, and is there a way to be able to monitor it and make sure that you don't have that
and
issue.
Then make a little bit of life changes and figure out a way to get out of hypertension. That's the goal. There's another one. Tivic Health has something called Clear Up. This is a bioelectrical sinus pain reliever.
So tell me how this works.
It's a little pen-shaped device that you press against your sinuses on the outside of your face.
Okay.
And it delivers a very low-level electrical charge that clears up sinus pain. Some of us really suffer from sinus pain.
So what does it do? Is it sort of encouraging your sinuses to drain?
It is getting to those nerves. Nerves are bioelectrical. Okay. Most of our system is bioelectrical. Mm-hmm. And we've been adding chemicals to change the electrical system in our bodies for a very long time.
Okay.
And now the medicine has changed where we're adding electrical pulses to change the chemicals in our body instead.
Steve Tesla was right again.
This is the future of technology, health technology. I look forward to testing out this one. There was a controversy this year at the CES. An award was given to a company that had a sex toy. And then that award was taken away because the product was deemed indecent, vulgar, or profane, according to the CES.
That's very interesting. And, while there's certainly many technologies move forward with sexuality mm-hmm. as being part of the subject or the reason for that, this is very interesting that we still, sexuality is certainly not something that we're
comfortable talking about.
We're on a podcast,
uncomfortable right now talking about it. Yeah,
we're dancing around. But our point being is that's really strange, isn't it? Because there are other displays.
Yeah, there are sex robots. There are dolls at the CES for sexual purposes. Mm-hmm. There's virtual reality porn.
And this one is based most apart for women.
Right.
And that seems to be the real issue here.
That's a problem.
Well, it's really interesting. Once again, sexuality is always kind of taboo-ish.
Mm-hmm.
Ish, when I say it's like it's there on the side and people have a lot of interest in it.
Right.
But they don't want it front and fore, in the front.
In America, here we are. We are very prudish sometimes when it comes to sexuality. And this is an example of the double standard of these things are okay, but oh no, this is somehow vulgar. This is something that our listeners brought up and they wanted us to talk about. And we're dancing around it because it is one of those taboo subjects even amongst adults.
Sure.
You know, it's not taboo.
What is not taboo, Steve?
The Chicago Bears.
For many years.
How about them Bears?
That's right. For many years, it is kind of taboo, isn't it? They've had a number of poor seasons, and then all of a sudden they had this wonderful season.
Uh-huh. Which ended with a thud.
Yeah,
it did. Yeah, poor Parkey. Steve. I'm sorry, Parkey.
Yeah, many people use alcohol in that situation.
Yes.
And Goose Island seemed to have been available.
Back to our Goose Island story, which was our book it this week.
So tell me what Goose Island was doing with the Chicago Bears' tragic end to their season.
Goose Island Brewery is Chicago's brewery, and they're trying to maintain that narrative, even though they're part of InBev now, and their beer may not be made here in Chicago any longer. They're still a part of the community. They decided to have a contest where anybody in Chicago could come in and kick a 43-yard field goal.
Why 43 yards, Steve?
Because that's the distance that Mr. Parkey unfortunately lost the game with.
That ended the season, Steve.
Ended the season with a missed field goal last week, and everybody was very, very upset. Some of them with Parkey, and some of them just, it was upsetting. So they decided, okay, in solidarity of this kicker, if you can do better, come on out, show us what you can do. We will give you tickets, airfare, hotel for any NFL game in 2019. They had 101 people come out and try to kick that field goal.
So 102 people can't hit that field goal, Steve.
Including Parkey, right? Including Parkey. 102 people. So these 100 people came out and they tried as hard as they could to kick that field goal. Zero. None of them achieved the goal of that field goal attempt.
But did they hit the uprights?
They did not hit the uprights. That takes real skill. That takes real skill.
Maybe that's a bonus there. Instead of 3 points, it could be four.
That's what I've always said. I've always said that. Why isn't that skill given more credence? Because, boy, if you could do that on a regular basis, that'd be
like
magic.
Like Parkey?
Like Parkey five times. Five times in the season.
Well, we had one during the national championship game, a college national championship game.
Yeah.
Too. So, you know, what can I say? Maybe it's becoming normal.
Kicking a field goal is very difficult. That's what the 100 people at the Goose Island found out on Saturday, that's for sure.
Well, especially after a few beers.
Well, that doesn't help, does it?
It may loosen you up a little bit.
You might be able to do it after a few. This is a fun story. I look forward to what Goose Island Brewery in Chicago is going to bring to us and their narrative of this idea of the local brewery, the local pub, because that's who they are. I don't know. I think we have enough information to survive another week, Chip. What do you think?
Only if we can come back next week, Steve.
I think we can. If you need more information, give us a call or a text. Our phone number is 805-4104-TMS. Our website is TooMuchScrolling.com. Our email is TooMuchScrolling@gmail.com. We're on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. We're on iTunes and Stitcher and TuneIn Radio. And we're on Spotify. Kids, just search on Spotify. You'll find Too Much Scrolling. I want to thank you again for listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Hessenblum.
We'll see you in the future. I just